You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast, brought to you by Ministry Grid. Ministry Grid is an online church leadership and volunteer training platform offering a library of thousands of videos and a suite of powerful admin tools to provide practical training for every area of ministry in your church. Find out more and get a free 30-day trial at ministrygrid.com/howitworks. Welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here with my co-host, Todd Adkins.
What?
And we are at the Catalyst Conference in Atlanta and have another awesome guest on. We've gotten a number of great conversations here. Today, we have Cameron Strang on, who is the founder and CEO of Relevance. So that's a magazine that you have probably seen, a podcast you have probably heard of. And then they have their web presence where they do, I mean, it's sort of online magazine, blog, articles, all sorts of stuff that you can't find in the magazine because that has more editorial tightness to it, I would imagine. But welcome to the podcast, Cameron.
Thanks for having me. It's awesome. So I have a lot to live up to. You've had a lot of amazing people already.
Well, you're just next in line.
We like a wide variety.
Ending on a high note.
So we had, John Piper, John Perkins, and John Maxwell. So that's a...
Oh, great.
If you want to go Johns...
I don't really have a lot to live up to now.
Well, no, I'm just saying a wide variety of people across the spectrum, not just church leaders.
So I'm the outlier is what you're saying.
No.
I'm your diversity.
We've had other outliers. There have been other... I'm an outlier. Maybe.
What Todd is trying to... Todd is conference ready.
I'm conference ready. It's 11, but I've had 2 cups of coffee and Red Bull, so I'm good to go.
Cameron, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got to your present role, anything, just letting listeners know who you are
Sure. I grew up in a publishing family. My parents started Charisma Magazine, mm-hmm. which is not a Baptist magazine. It's more of the charismatic world and stuff.
Charisma?
Charisma Magazine.
There you go.
Will you be speaking in tongues on the podcast?
I'll try to refrain.
Todd can interpret, so we're good to go.
He has the gift of interpretation. I like that.
I do.
So I grew up in it, and my dad started it around when I was born. And so I literally kind of saw, how you... the power of media, I didn't want to follow my parents' footsteps, what son does. But in college, I knew that I was drawn to media. And when I was a sophomore in college, I clearly got this idea to give and create a platform for what God was doing in our generation. And there wasn't anything. It's like the church did a great job until you're through high school, and then they pick you back up when you have kids. But there's a 15-year gap where there weren't resources. There wasn't anything about kind of that journey in your 20s and 30s. Where you're kind of figuring out why you believe what you believe and how you're going to live your life. And I wanted to give voice to that. And I saw the power of media to connect and I just singularly focused. That's what I was going to do with my life from the age of 19. The magazine came out 8 years later. So in that time, it was a lot of learning how to do it, getting jobs, internships, things like that, refining the vision, refining the plans. How do you reach an audience that is unreachable? They don't shop in Christian bookstores. They don't go to church at the time. And how do you reach them? And and this is pre-social media and all that. So it's like, it took a long time to figure it out. I remember coming home the next school break, after I was like, I know what I'm gonna do with my life. And I told my dad my idea for the magazine. And he goes, if that was a viable audience, somebody would already be doing it. That's what he told me.
Boy, if that, not to rip on your dad, but if that line of thinking was true, nobody would ever start anything new.
Correct. And so out of spite, I went back and I wanted to prove him wrong. I wanted to show him that this was a viable audience. I was part of it and that there was a need for something like this. And then the next summer I would come home and kind of tell him my plans, and he'd poke holes in the plans again. And then next summer, again, out of spite, I was like, I'm going to show him. And he kept ripping it apart. And then, but I knew what he was doing now in hindsight. He was just like, if this is real, if this is something you're supposed to do, you need to really think about it. And so
don't do some half-baked.
Right. And that was the thing, is like 8 years pursuing this thing. I this conference is full of a lot of people who are like, I'm gonna go change the world. And then, in 6 months when it gets a little hard, they lose interest, they stop. And I think that was the difference. And out of spite, spite kept me going.
I feel like that's easier to do in when all things are digital, where it's easier to start and it's easier to quit.
That's interesting.
You just
totally.
You just stop maintaining your website or whatever, and your cause.
And because you feel like so many other people are doing it, you know, so many other people have the same idea I do, or somebody steals my idea. I mean, you know, there's all those reasons I think for a young person to quit when nobody who does well. I mean, you'll have some people that will have overnight success, but most people don't. Most people have to do a daily discipline of just sticking with it until something happens, you know?
Yeah.
The crazy thing is the lucky people are usually the people that work the hardest.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, just the case.
To make your own luck mentality.
Yep.
We started the company 15 years ago. When I got the idea, it was 20 years ago. I was 39 now. And I'm just like, that's dawned on me. It's like literally, I know exactly the day that I got the idea for Relevant. It was mid-October, you know, 20 years ago. So, I mean, like, it's almost like next week will be exactly 20 years. And I'm like, what in the world? I mean, that's crazy that I've been doing kind of this one thing that long.
Well, this is the 20-year special, anniversary special we're doing live right here.
That's exciting.
We just decided that.
We just decided that.
And, you know, but the funny thing is, like, along the way, we published books for 5 years. We had several other magazines. We had a social justice magazine, a pastor's magazine for 8 years, a women's magazine for a while. We did resources. We did all this other stuff. And
were all those under the Relevant banner? Like, was that still the name of the company?
The company, yeah. Yeah, but, you know, so our, you know, millennial girls magazine or women's magazine was called Radiant. Our social justice magazine is Reject Apathy. You know, we've done all these other things. And it came to a point where, like, around 2010, 11, 12, you know, we started the company in 2000. So we've been doing this 10 years at that point, 12 years. And we were treading water. I mean, we were just like spread so thin. And we had a marketing agency in our company. It's actually how we started. It was like, you know, Relevant and all these other ideas couldn't pay the bills. And I needed to have a good creative team. So we started as like a web design marketing agency. And 12 years later, we're still doing it. And it was like 40% of our revenue, and really kind of allowed Relevant to find its legs in time, you know, and like it didn't have to be an overnight success or anything. And around 2012, we just like not only we weren't treading water very well, you know, we were taking on water and we weren't growing. And in July of 12, we added up like everybody that we interacted with, whether magazine reader, visitor to the website, podcast listener. And it was about 750,000 people that month. And I just started thinking like, but it had been kind of the same number for several years, you know? And I was like, I don't want to, that's nothing to sneeze at. But at the same time, like I wanted to change the world, and we're like 12 years in and like we've plateaued, you know?
Yeah.
So I started, you know, maybe I'm supposed to sell it to somebody else. Maybe I'm supposed to shut it down. I don't know. Like, and then I felt like God was like, okay, thank you for now finally asking me what you want me to, you know, what I want you to be doing in the next moving forward. And I, you know, it started birthing new dreams in me of like, what would we be doing if we were reaching 10 million people a month that we aren't doing now? You know, what, like tangibly. I mean, it's not 10 million people going to have a paper product mailed to their house, you know, and pay for it. And so what would we be doing then? Like, if we want to like move the needle and impact culture, which is what drives my passion, like what would we be doing? And really elevated my thinking and started to shut everything down. If it wasn't Relevant, we stopped. In 2012, we shut down over 65% of our revenue. Our staff went from 35 to 11. And we just right-sized to be able to just do one thing and try to do it well. It was a major gamble. We also started saying, can we give it all away? Like I'm tired of having to live my life trying to sell you books or sell you a magazine. Like, can if we believe in the content, can we give it away and build up an audience? And then hopefully after that, advertisers will come once we build the audience. It's a major gamble. Can we flip the company? 2 years later, July of 2014, we did the same measurement. And that month we reached 17.3 million people.
I think that actually leads very well into our first question, which is, you know, who are you learning from?
I would say the answer in the last 2 years, primarily, threefold. One, part of our major change in my own growth and our organization's growth was using data Scott Harrison actually tells stories about at Charity Water when things radically changed. And I heard him, well, actually he was on our podcast and he was telling me the story of the change that happened in their company when they started looking at data. And so we, in that time, started adopting the same sort of prioritization of analytics and feedback and stuff. And so we listen to our audience. We're learning from our audience every day. I know exactly what they want and I know how to give it to them. I don't always do it. I think it's important that you also have a missional clarity and you don't just do what, you know, kind of lowest hanging fruit, you know. Scott talked about that. He knows, they know, like if they do an email with a certain subject line, he told me this story, you know, it'll get X amount of response. But he said that their focus is storytelling. And so they will intentionally do certain subject lines that are more about the story than the thing that they know will move the needle more. And there's an internal tension because they're about raising money to build wells. Yeah. So like, why would you do something that's not going to raise as much money? But he's like, we can't lose our unique focus on storytelling. And so I've had that in the back of my head. And so learning from people like Scott and people who have like had success and different areas, because I don't want to emulate anybody in my own space, but I can draw from the nonprofit space and other spaces. And so I'm learning from a lot of peers and innovators who are out there and they're experimenting, they're seeing what works and can we apply that to us? So learning from our audience, learning from peers, using analytics has been a big thing. I told you, I came to Catalyst last year for the first time and I heard, it's embarrassing how few of these incredibly famous speakers I've actually heard speak myself. And so in the last year and a half, I've been kind of becoming, I'm catching up to everybody else as far as like my own intake of true amazing thought leaders, Christian thought leaders and stuff. And in my personal life, I've been last few years really learning from my counselor. I mean, I've been meeting with a counselor, gone through a really hard time personally and stuff. And that changed my life. I mean, like, every leader out there needs to be meeting with a counselor regularly.
You're not the first guest to say that. Yes. We've heard that from a couple other people. Kerry Newhoff talked about the value of counselors
for a while about that.
Yeah, I mean, in his life and
well, Don Miller's new book, Scary Close, is about his journey and how counseling kind of changed his life. And I actually knew him through that, and like saw the transformation in him and. You know, there's a thing called the Enneagram that was developed by monks back in the 1600s, and that changed my life. But going every couple of weeks and meeting with a counselor and just having somebody that can kind of like, you know, you can vulnerably share your burns with and can speak, and they have no agenda with you, because a lot of leaders have people who have an agenda. They're close to you, they're friends or whatever, but they want something from you at some point.
Trying to push you in a direction.
Yeah, they have a way that things... But this, a trusted space, a trusted person that has no agenda, cares about you, and is going to walk with you through whatever season. I think a lot of times, you know, it's like last resort. Oh, I guess I have to go to counseling or therapy or whatever. But it's like, okay, once I fix myself, I can stop. But yeah. I mean, like that's not the mindset. And I would say that was the thing that's probably changed my life. And by changing my life, really changed the company and everything Relevant's doing in the last 3 years.
So, wow.
Yeah.
But the question number two, you're talking about Relevant and all this change and missional clarity and all these things. I mean, this, I think this fits very well with where the conversation has gone, is what is the main point of emphasis for your leadership, either for yourself personally or for the organization?
Well, for me personally, it was get nicer. I just need to be nicer. And so that was my takeaway.
Barnabas, it's time for you to go to counseling. Yeah.
I reject that.
No, like, you know, it's one of those things, like when you're drowning and like for 5 years, the leader is the one who takes it home, you know, and you're not sleeping well and you're kind of on edge a little bit and you want things to be better and they're not better. And then what you have a little bit of an edge to you, at least I do. And one of the big things in the last 3 years for my own leadership style and whatever was encourage, put people in positions to succeed and be their biggest fan and set them up to go thrive. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to learn from those mistakes. It's about, you know, adapting and moving forward, right?
How do you practically change the mindset to be nicer? I mean, that's I realize you just said three more sort of characteristics and that's helpful, but
I know what frustrates me. Like as a perfectionist, as a creative perfectionist, I'm our creative director at our company. The editorial team answers to me too. I'm more interested in the creative side of what we're doing and why we're doing it, than running a business. I hate running a business. I'd rather somebody else run the business. But I'm a perfectionist. And so it's like, I want everybody to like see the world the way I see it. And sometimes I haven't communicated a clear vision. We're on two different pages and whatever. I know it frustrates me. And so I've surrounded myself with people that can speak into me, like mm-hmm. at the office. Like they can, like they know when I'm. Let's do that creative review this afternoon after he's had lunch. You know, they're kind of like setting me up to be at my best.
Is he hungry? Is he tired?
Yeah, he's hangry.
Yeah, and then too, like I mean, frankly, just counseling has softened me and given me a better perspective on kind of like what's actually important and stuff. And I don't think I get hung up on stuff I used to get hung up on before. As far as an emphasis on our leadership team, it really is about missional clarity, and it's all it's been for the last 3 years. Every idea. I mean, there's a million ideas in any organization. There's always tweaks you can make. There's always big new initiatives you can do. And my big thing in every meeting, and I'm trying to get every person from top to bottom in an organization to think like this, is just why? Why? Why Relevant? Why would Relevant do that?
And what is the mission of Relevant that you're matching everything up to say, how does this fit with us?
We want to give voice to what God's doing this generation on one hand, but we also want to challenge status quo. Our audience wants to live a life that matters. They want to make a difference. And so, you know, at the same time, we're kind of sitting at this intersection of faith and culture. That's a unique spot. But that's part of what living a life that matters. I mean, our audience wants to engage the world around them. They don't want to be separatists. They want to engage. But what does that look like? It's not just mindlessly becoming like the world. How are we light in the darkness? What's the discernment? What's the filter? How do we like seek truth? How do we chew the meat, spit out the bones? I mean, but then also, like, how do we challenge our generation to pursue pursue God's best? You know, like, how do we focus on the right things? How do we not fall into partisan politics? How do we rewrite the script here? You know, so there's forming worldview on some levels. There's filter and discernment. There's helping people see a bigger God, a bigger world. So our mission is to empower our generation to change the world around them for Christ.
So you said you're 39, right?
Mm-hmm.
As you get older, how do you maintain reaching the generation? Or are you is the generation that you're reaching continuing to get older along with you?
The weird thing was my first business plan when I was in college, I was 21. I put in there that the target average reader for Relevant should be 27. The lifestyle that we represent.
Yeah.
I'll say this. Relevant doesn't reach a demographic. It actually reaches a psychographic. So
that makes sense.
A Christian 28-year-old who wants to live in a rural town, who wants a simple life and doesn't want to go change the world, probably isn't going to have a ton of connection points with what we talk about.
Even though demographically it was...
Yeah.
They seem sweet.
Christian, 20... Yeah, sure. Yeah. But then there's going to be like 60-year-olds who live in Manhattan and want to go like, you know, they are full on still in
a catalyst. I've seen more 50-year-old of world-changing hipsters here than I know what to do with.
It's true. And so we're reaching a psychographic. That's the truth. That's not an excuse. But so I put in there that... But the lifestyle we represent, the taste and the culture side of things... Target 27. I did that at 21. I figured at 27, I remember when I was in college, when I was 19, David Lauren, Ralph Lauren's son, who now works for him, published a magazine, and they called it Swing, Life in Your 20s. That was the tagline. And I was at 19 picking it up and reading it voraciously because I wanted to be in my 20s, you know. And I remember in college, I wanted to be in my mid-20s. And so I thought, like, if we could target 27, we'll get college kids because they don't want stuff
for
college kids.
Yeah.
High school kids want stuff that's for college. And then now college kids don't want the college stuff because high school kids like it. So they want, right. So mid-20s.
Which is actually a lesson for all marketers and publishers. Don't try to target high school and college students.
Well, think about Abercrombie and Fitch. When I was in college, Abercrombie was a 20-something's brand and the college kids liked it. Then high school kids started liking it because they want to be like college kids. And then the college kids just walked away.
Yep.
And then the middle school kids saw the high school kids wearing it. And then they started buying it. And then high schoolers walked away.
And then all the conservative Christians went bonkers because the middle school kids were getting the Abercrombie & Fitch catalogs.
Correct.
This is true.
And
I was actually a brand rep for Abercrombie & Fitch at the time.
And it killed the brand. And it's like, so
that and the smell of their stores, that killed the brand too, let's be honest.
By the way, I did leave when all that mess happened.
They were like the original Axe body spray smell.
That's true.
They were disgusting.
To me, it was like, if you can, you have to protect it. You have to protect this mid-20s thing. Because then you'll get mid-20s because it's their life.
Yeah.
And you'll also get mid-30s because they still think they're 27. I mean, they still mentally. And so you get a 15-year span by targeting one age, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what we've always done. Our demographic study, when the magazine came out in 2003, our average subscriber is 27. This year, our average subscriber is 27. It's bizarre. And it's because we protect it. How do you protect it? Yep. Number one, it's not just content. In a magazine, 40% of your magazine is going to be ads. So we don't allow ads that don't target our core reader. So if the primary audience for your youth conference is high schoolers, we don't allow you to advertise in Relevant. If your ad says the word youth, we don't allow you to put it in the magazine. If your audience is CCM parents and, you know, say for the little ears, inspirational stuff, we don't allow you to put an ad in Relevant. And that's not an endorsement of all the ads that are in Relevant, but it, we put clear parameters to protect this 27. Because if I'm flipping through, if I'm a Christian 27-year-old that this magazine is totally intended for, and I see pastor ad, pastor ad, pastor ad, I go, oh, this magazine's not for me.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, it is for you. So I have to protect that. So we don't allow, if it says pastor stuff, we don't allow it.
Having placed ads in Relevant, that you... your creative or your ad folks have more sort of editorial control and input over ads than just about any other magazine I worked with.
Yeah.
So that's, and I, to, which I found very frustrating at the time, but understand better based on what you just said.
Yeah, we have to protect. We have to protect it, or else we become Abercrombie.
Yeah.
You either become a pastor's thing or become a youth thing, and
or you become
done.
One of those Christian magazines that you flip through and it's like 3 pages of articles, 4 pages of ads, and they do range from safe for the little ears to like a pastor's conference in Vancouver, and you go, what in the world
what
is this aimed
at? Who is this for? And so we've had to protect that. So.
Well, I think, you know, so far we've talked about what you're learning. We've talked about points of emphasis. It seems like, I mean, you know, you're in publishing, we're in publishing. That world is changing daily. I mean, just get up and it's a brand new day. Wait 5 minutes, it will change. So what obstacles? It's obviously that you're a learner. I mean, just having listened to you and just seeing the decisions that you've made and how you have grown your company and how you've shifted. But what obstacles are you currently facing in your leadership, either organizationally, personally?
I think, like you said, in the media side, not knowing where this is all going, that's an obstacle because we're all kind of in uncharted territory, you know?
Yeah.
I would say the obstacles a few years ago are very different than now. Now it's, you know, last year we had 73 million readers that we tracked. And
unique?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's web and print?
Yeah, and podcast listeners. So, I mean, somebody might have listened to a podcast and come to the website, and we can't tell.
Right.
But as far as, like, unique people at the website, it's not redundant. It's
right.
Unique.
Yeah.
And then print readers and iPad magazine readers. 73 million people. So now, all of a sudden, it's a totally different ballgame. Before, we were just little, like, indie, under the radar. We could kind of mess up, and nobody noticed. And now it's like... Okay. I mean, that doesn't like give me concern, but that is an obstacle of like kind of the responsibility that you have to have when you have that many years. And so that presses me, that pushes me to make sure I'm hearing God and I'm, and you know, surrounding, you know, we're putting the right voices on the platform. And I mean, it's just the gravitas of the moment. It changes your focus as leading this thing. On the business side, I love where we're at in media. I don't see the unknown as an obstacle. I see it as an opportunity because when we intentionally in 2012 shuttered everything, it was because we were moving slowly because we were spread so thin, even at our little scale. And now we're like a little speedboat. And I feel like a lot of media companies are like cruise ships.
Yeah.
And to like move this thing 3 degrees is a major endeavor. And for us, we just are going full bore, full, you know, 90 miles an hour. And then we turn left 90 degrees and some people fly out of the boat and then, you know, whatever. And then we learn a lot. And then, whoa, we failed over here. And then we'll just zip back. And then like, I love that we can do that. I mean, we built out studios at our office, you know, kind of. Some companies would spend millions of dollars doing that. I just hired a college kid and paid him $12 an hour and just like we just figured it out on our own, you know? And we just like we built stuff and we try it and it's low risk and we get to innovate and have fun. And I love all that. So I don't see the unknown of media as an obstacle. I see it as an opportunity. I think the obstacle is actually when you find impact and find an audience and find success, it's like, oh crap, now what do you do with it? And what is God calling us to do next? Because a lot of times leaders can see the next hurdle, at least me, I've had to learn that. I see the next step, the next milestone. And then like, oh, okay, now you're there. Oh crap, now I got to hear God again. You know, it's like, so that's the position that I'm in right now.
Well, Andy Stanley said something in his talk yesterday here where he said the phrase, wonder lives at the frontiers of your ignorance. So you're talking about how you love the unknown, and it's that's where discovery is, that's where growth is. And it that his phrase resonated with me, and yeah, you're iterating it in a specific context. And I think ignorance and what we don't know is often seen as an obstacle, but obstacle and opportunity really go hand in hand, I think.
Well, there's so many innovators here and stuff, like, you know, that we've heard sharing, and it's like, I mean, people who say, what if? Yes. I love living my life in the what if, man. I want every meeting we ever have at our company to have a what if moment. Like, hey, well, you know, like, we need to be dreaming. And yeah. And if we're just kind of like maintaining where we're at least in our audience and our media, like,
you would have lost your audience 10 years ago.
Been there, done that, you're done. Yeah. And so, like, I love the fact that we're unfunded. We have no investors. We have nobody behind us. It was just a 24-year-old kid scrapping it together. And that lack of resources, if you would have asked me a decade ago, my biggest obstacle, I would say lack of resources. I mean, like, we have bigger dreams than we have money. And I would have seen that as our biggest challenge, right? And it was always an issue. I mean, and we were in over our heads always, yeah, in debt and trouble with the IRS at times. I mean, we just couldn't make, you know, we bit off when we could chew almost always. And that was always an obstacle, was that financial noose. But that forced us to hustle. So we couldn't stay still. We had to, like, do something else to raise a little bit more revenue. We had to launch a new thing. We had to change that. We had always, every year, we were having to hustle just to make ends meet. And that hustle kept us moving forward and kept us changing and evolving and figuring things out as we went. And yeah, it's like, I know that if I had resources, we wouldn't have had the hustle, and we would probably be gone long ago. So despise not, right? I mean, yeah, like, yeah. And I'm thinking of church planners. I'm thinking of people like, man, if we just had that building, no. Yeah. Like, you struggling is going to make you better. You yeah, sharper. You're going to have to do it.
You stagnate when you get everything
absolutely,
you want.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I always do things to keep us, like, on our knees. Like, I'm a bad business owner in some respects, because I'm not profit-minded. I'm mission-minded. I'm impact-minded. And so if we have $5, I'm going to spend $5, you know? Right. And we're always trying new stuff, and I love that.
Well, I mean, Christine Kane, in her talk that she gave just 30 minutes ago or whatever it was, said, you ask and pray for signs, wonders, and miracles, but you never put yourself in a position to need one. And she's addressing people in leadership, saying you need to press to the place where you have nothing, and you depend on the things that God can do. And I think that's where the great things happen.
You're only doing what you can do. You're not doing much.
You're putting a real low ceiling on yourself.
Back in the day, I mean, my dad told me once when I was a kid, he said, dream dreams that are so big that without God, you'd fail.
Well, let's take a bit of a turn in our question. Number four is, what does leadership in your home look like? So it could be self-leadership, family leadership, whatever that is. But what does leadership in your home look like?
I went through a divorce 3 years ago, and it changed everything. You know, mm-hmm. you kind of go, you're just floating along, and, you know, you're focusing on work, you're focusing on other things, and then all of a sudden you look up and marriage is gone. And that forced me to completely change my perspective of home. And I have a son who's 5 now, he's almost 6, and raising him and being intentional about you know, raising him the right way and the environment and spiritual leadership in his life. And but it comes back to me being healthy, you know, me being focused on the right thing. So the weird thing, leadership in my home, one thing I started doing in the last year and a half is I started really going to church. I always went to church, but I never liked going to church. Right. And I would do the bare minimum to be able to pass the test from people who were like, does he go to church?
Yeah,
he
goes
to
you. Church.
Yeah. but I'm a back row guy, you know. And a little over a year ago, a church was planted in downtown in my city. And a friend of mine went, and I was just like miserable. I'd been going to a certain church for like 5 years and just, I was dead. And I heard about this, and I went on week 2, and I walked in, and I was like, oh, this is where I'm supposed to be. I mean, I knew I was home.
It's amazing how that happens. You just get that sense at certain churches.
You just know. And my pastor and I went to lunch that week, and he was like, cool, you're going to serve, and you're going to, you know, get me out of my comfort zone, basically.
Yeah.
And I have a small group that meets in my house, and he made me join the church softball team. And doing
what position do you play?
I went to one game, and I said I joined. I didn't say I was still on it. But I don't know. We were moving around. I don't know. I didn't like it. But his point was, get involved, you know, do stuff with that. And so, like, community, my house is open to my community from church now. We have people over all the time and stuff. And so to me, I changed my mindset of what home is. And I want to live life in community now and be part of something that's bigger than myself, you know? And that's changed things for me.
Yeah.
And I'm excited, like, I mean, it's, we're, you know, years past the awful stuff, and it's awesome being a dad and getting to pour into him, and he's in kindergarten now, and you're just seeing him learn and grow. Next week is his birthday, and I'm taking him out to, he wanted to go on a trip with me, so we're going out to Los Angeles together, just me and him. Just
you do Disney or anything?
We have Disney. I'm in Orlando.
That's
so,
true. Yeah. Never mind. You have the bigger and better Disney.
Yeah, I know. We're going to a taping of The Voice. He loves music and he loves
that,
The Voice.
That's amazing.
And so we pulled some strings, and we're going to sit in the red chairs, and he's going to make a lifelong memory.
That's I want right, to yeah, make that'll, memories. That'll be something. That's,
yeah.
Making memories is something that, I don't know, about a year ago maybe, I don't remember who it was, but some genius.
It was me.
It's probably you. We'll give you credit for it.
You guys were out shopping for khakis together.
We were.
And, he was looking for chinos. I was looking for a cardigan. And and he gave me this, just the idea that making memories with your kids is way more important than giving stuff to your kids.
Absolutely.
And so I have completely shifted how I think about birthdays for my kids.
Absolutely.
And holidays and whatever. And yeah, I mean, we give them presents, but I want them to have the experience.
Yeah.
So this next question actually goes really well with that. And I guess we could ask you to go back and look at this from your 19-year-old self.
Yeah.
But going back, what would you tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead?
About preparing to lead? Well, I would say it doesn't have to be done tomorrow. Like, I my personality is like, oh, God gave us an idea, so it should be done tomorrow, right? Let's do it right now. That long and thoughtful, like doing it the right way, taking the time to build something the right way is the right long-term way to do it. Quick is not better. I would force myself to ask people for help. I'm really stubborn and resolute. And a lot of people who have an idea or vision or whatever are like that. They're like, there's a reason why God gave it to you, you know. I mean, in the Bible, you know, don't cast your pearls before swine, and like, mm-hmm. don't like talk about your idea. Just go and try it and do it. But at some point, you've got to have people that you trust, that you can depend on and learn from. Because Relevant was so different than other Christian media at the time, it just kind of flew solo. And I think a lot of the struggles, a lot of the mistakes financially and different things were because I didn't ask for help. I didn't have any mentors speaking into me. I would have told my 19-year-old self, 20-year-old self, you don't know everything and you need to be a student. I think in the last 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, that's the thing that's changed everything for me is like just learning again, you know. And I'm going to New York next week, going to a media conference. Just like, it's unbelievable download of insight from people who are way ahead of me, you know. So it's like, I love that. It was before, it was like, no, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And, you know.
It's so amazing how often it comes up that, you know, I haven't heard anybody put it this way yet, but, you know, a leading posture is a learning posture when it all comes down to it.
Yeah. Well, that was this episode of the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Really appreciate you listening. And if you would jump online, leave us a rating and review, we would appreciate it. It helps other listeners find the podcast as well. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in next time.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. To learn more about how you can train leaders in your church, visit ministrygrid.com/howitworks and watch a short demo video. For participating, you will get a free 30-day trial for your entire church. Again, that's ministrygrid.com/howitworks.